with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives, from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Barbara Sullivan. In the last segment of AbleQuest, we had the pleasure of talking with an extraordinary man named Ben Felton. Ben was an extremely active individual, skilled in many sports, particularly motorcycle racing, before going totally blind in his late 20s. After a difficult period of adjustment to his disability, Ben took charge of his life and became a world champion sportsman. He represented Australia in rowing and cricket and was instrumental in establishing rowing as a Paralympic sport. After many years of representing Australia in cricket, Ben was on a tour of the West Indies when he decided to call it a day. And so, in a contemplative moment, he made the obvious choice for a blind person. He would return to motorcycle racing.
The thing I missed the most when I went blind, was losing my sight and having to give up... Look, giving up driving was inconvenience, but giving up riding motorcycles was a passion, and I really missed that more than anything else. And I always dreamed about racing motorcycles as a kid. That was my number one choice. And when I'm sitting under this coconut palm and the Isle of Barbados, and I thought, well, what do I really want to do? And my dream was to race motorcycles. And I kind of figured, well, oh, you can't do that. You're blind. You know, how are you going to ride a bike blind? And I thought, yeah, I reckon I could do this. And so when I got home, first thing I did was jumped on the internet and Googled blindfold land speed record, and bingo. And I found out that there's other guys around the world who have attempted similar records, and I thought, that's what I'm going to do.
Now, how is it possible? How do you do it?
Well, it takes a lot of courage. You need a fast motorcycle, and the other really key ingredient is trust in a navigator. And so my navigator is John Nasser, and John will give me directions. For example, you know, left, right, straight, yep. And the other one is stop. And basically, when I'm riding the motorcycle, I ride the motorcycle solo. John, initially, he's been on another motorcycle, but now we've moved him into a car, and that seems to be more effective. And he chases behind me, giving me directions as we go down the runway.
They're known as a chase rider, is that right?
Yes, that'd be a chase rider. And, well, we've done it two ways. One's with two motorcycles. One's a chase rider, the other one I call the navigator. If the radio drops out, which we had problems early in the piece, and I could say that's an interesting experience when you're doing 200 kilometres an hour and all of a sudden there's silence.
Oh, no.
So that's why we had two chase riders. And what happens then is we use the horn. So if I tend to drift one way or the other, they'll beep the horn and then I move away from the horn. Now, that's effective under about 200 kilometres an hour. Once you're over that, you're going so fast, the wind is incredibly noisy and you just don't hear the horn. So that's why we moved. Once we got to higher speeds, we then moved the navigator into a chase car because then he could focus more on giving accurate navigation information to me while being a passenger and not having to ride another bike. We've learnt a lot from our recent challenge about how to navigate and to ride the bike. What I'm most impressed with is I hadn't ridden a motorcycle for 25 years. Prior to attempting the land speed record, I had about 20 hours of practice on a brand new motorcycle. So very pleased with my riding.
Have you had one attempt?
Yes, we did. Yes. On the 25th of October, recently, at Tamora, at the Air Aviation Museum. They've got some runways down there. And so we attempted the land speed record. The Tamora 1000 was a motorsport festival they have down there each year, and we attempted to do this as a feature event during lunch break. And on the 25th of October, it was Tamora's hottest ever October day in history. And it ended up being 38 degrees Celsius when we pushed the bike out onto the runway at 12 o'clock. Extremely hot, very dry and windy, and the conditions weren't ideal. I had four runs on the fourth attempt, so you can imagine the runway is 2 kilometres long, and at the 1 kilometre mark we have the speed trap, which is a laser beam across the runway at about 20 metres apart. I went through that speed trap at 196 kilometres an hour, and John said right, and I turned left. And about 10 metres past the speed trap, I went straight off the runway in a huge cloud of dust. Managed to dodge a few landing lights and a few distance markers, avoided a lagoon that was about 15 feet deep. Our header was heading straight towards a car. We managed to get around that and then do an emergency stop. And I stopped about a metre and a half away from a barbed wire fence. So that was about a 450-metre journey across country, and Suzuki Hayabusas are a racing motorcycle, not really built for going on dirt. But after that run, I realised that I was getting heat fatigue and I made an error. And we decided then that it wasn't going to happen on that day. So we postponed the attempt and we're already making plans to do a new one.
And when's that going to be?
It will be in September, October next year, 2015. We are planning to do it closer to Sydney this time. That'll give us time to do some more practice, to do a few more modifications to the bike, and plan to do it on a very early, crisp, cool morning.
Yes, the heat obviously didn't help.
Well, engines don't perform very well in the heat, and motorcycle riders in leathers and helmets that are sealed up, laying on top of an engine that puts out 200 horsepower, you get very hot very, very quickly and don't last very long. So we've learnt a lot, gained a lot of knowledge from our experience. We'll be doing the record attempt. And, Nani, the reason I'm doing this whole land speed record attempt is, well, not just that I'm having a whole lot of fun, but I really want to promote a foundation called Insight of Dreams. So I've got big plans, Nani, about why I'm doing this, and I guess my experience in sport. I want to apply that now into motorsport, and I want to create track driving experiences for people with a disability and people who are disadvantaged.
And tell me about this then. What are your objectives?
There are four key objectives for the Insight of Dreams Foundation, and they are to inspire and to mentor people to achieve their dreams. The other one is to create a motorsport club for people with a disability to experience track driving experiences in modified open wheel racing cars, and also people who are disadvantaged. And the fourth key objective is I'd like to be able to support other blind and vision impaired agencies, the groups that have supported me over the years and helped me come to terms with my blindness. So I want to give something back. So the foundation really is about opening up motorsport for people with a disability. And what we're proposing to do there, Marnie, is with these open wheel race cars, we'll construct them so that they're modified. For example, a person who has paraplegia can drive an open-wheel racing car that has hand controls, for example. I mean, we can organise a hoist and things like that for access. For blind and vision-impaired people, we will have a two-seater racing car with dual controls, and we can have a professional driver sitting next to them using an intercom system. So this is not about racing. This is about people with a disability to come along and to enjoy a track driving experience, driving a racing car around a racetrack in a safe environment. So that's really the main aim and objectives of the Insight of Dreams Foundation.
Is it up and running?
Yeah, well, we've done a number of drafts of the Constitution and other documentation, and currently with lawyers in Sydney, establishing that foundation, registering it, and obviously seeking tax deductibility and gift recipiency and those sorts of things. So the target is to have that foundation established by February, because in February I'll be doing a demonstration ride day at the opening of the Australian V8 Supercar Series on the 7th and 8th of February at Sydney Motorsport Park. And it's the launch of the V8 Supercar Series, and so they throw the gates open for free to the public. They're expecting about 30,000 spectators, and we'll be promoting the Australian Racing Drivers Club and the Sydney Motorsport Park and the V8 Supercar guys will be asking the general public to make a gold coin donation towards the foundation.
That's one way that they can get involved. They can actually see you in action. How else can they get involved, either as a volunteer or as a participant?
Look, Marnie, I've got a website. If people would like more information or yes, to get in contact with me, they can always go to www.blindspeed.com.au. And there's Facebook there and email and the like. But there's quite a bit of information there, Marnie. There's quite a bit of footage, photos, and even a couple of documentaries with a project and Sunrise is there if you click on media. And people can also make a donation to the foundation if they like as well.
And is this how you're funding your record attempts?
No, the record attempt that I just did, I fully funded that myself. I have got one or two smaller sponsors, which have been very helpful. Octec Disability Employment Services have been one of my sponsors. But no, it's been volunteers and people with a lot of passion and people who have captured the vision and enthusiasts. And no, we're doing it all for love, but really it's all about establishing the foundation, and that's the way people can get involved in the longer term.
And when you're doing your speed records or attempts at them, is there a large team involved?
Well, we do have a fairly large team. My brother, Leo, is our team manager. Obviously, I have Glenn Spinks, who's one of my chase riders, and he's been racing motorcycles for many years. John, my navigator. I have a couple of mechanics in our team in Tamora. One of my cousins was a Channel 9 cameraman, so he brought down all his video equipment, and we had some people looking after media and marketing. It's quite a large team of people to put together. Probably all up, there would have been about 15 of us, I guess, in the team to make it happen. It sounds pretty simple by just riding a motorcycle down a track, but...
No, it doesn't.
To get all the appropriate approvals and the bureaucracy and the licensing, and it's taken me 3 years to put this together. So it's been a massive undertaking.
And does the bike need to be modified as a special bike? Or?
Yeah, well, it's a 2014 Suzuki Hayabusa. Not a lot of people know what that is unless you're an absolute motorcycle enthusiast, but basically it's the most powerful motorcycle that you can buy to ride on the road. So I purchased that from Suzuki. They sold that bike to me at a reduced, what they call, race package price. But I've also since then spent about $5,000 on modifying the bike. So the standard exhausts are not there, so we put a Yoshimura racing exhaust system. I've set the bike up to how I had my old racing bike 25 years ago. We tune the bike to get maximum horsepower. We don't need to meet the Australian emission control regulations anymore. So the standard bike would put out about 180 to 85 horsepower. At the moment, mine's putting out about 205 horsepower. Standard, the bike weighs about 230 kilograms and mine weighs about 210 kilos. So we're talking a power-to-weight ratio of nearly 1-to-1. The only other machines that can get to a power-to-weight ratio is a Formula One racing car. So the bike is super fast. Marty, to give you an idea, when I ride the bike, my helmet is flat on the tank. So my face is facing the tank. I'm on this bike and on one of the runs, it wants to wheel spin in the first 5 gears. And it's quite daunting when you're in third gear, accelerating very quickly to 200 kilometres an hour and the bike is wheel spinning and wants to do a wheelie all the way down the runway. It's a lot of fun and it takes a lot of skill. If it wasn't for my racing experience and riding nearly every day from the age of 7 to 24, I can tell you doing what I'm doing is extremely dangerous unless you've got those skills that you only get through racing for many, many years.
Ben, you're a wonderful inspiration to any young people out there, but particularly people with a disability such as yours. Thank you for sharing your experiences with us, and we wish you the very, very best for the next trial at the record, but in particular with your Sight of Dreams Foundation.
And that was Marnie Roper speaking with Ben Felton about his astonishing and brave attempt to set a new blindfold motorcycle land speed record at over 265 kilometres an hour. Good luck, Ben, for your next attempt.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next programme.